the way, whatever questions you might have, you're certainly welcome to ask them. We have a very different group today.
They will be joining us later.
Okay. So, so we're going to go in the same area and see some of the landscape designs, because Furman College is known as one of the 10 most beautiful campuses in America. And you'll see how beautifully they continue to improve the landscape design here.
Will you share something about Mother's time in Japan? Of the influence?
Well, you know, she spoke to the women in Japan. She had a great love for Japan. I have something that I just gave an architect I met who is going to see to the landscaping at the Rama's new home on a beautiful lake. They have an island there, basically an island. They filled in just so you could drive in to it. There's water all around. It's so beautiful. And in this letter, this selection of quotes from Mother. Mother speaks about the beauty of Japan and how that's one of their great gifts to the world. And she says it must not be allowed to die out. I've been twice to Japan, and you know they've accepted a lot of the Western ways. You don't see kimonos very much anymore, and you see Western dress mostly. But if you go out into the countryside, there's still that great beauty where everything people touch is imbued with beauty. And I went to I can tell you about that real quick. I went to Kyoto, the famous gardens where mother went. And in Kyoto, we had a tour of this monastery. And this gentleman, a monk, took us to each building, and I have never heard more perfect English in my life. And he gave us a tour and described everything in such beauty. So we finished the tour, and I said to him, "May I come back tomorrow and ask you a question?" Yes, come. So come at 8 o'clock. So at 8 o'clock I knock on the door, and it opens, and he's there. Exactly at 8. And I say to him, "Sir, I have a very important question that..." "Slow. No English. No English." He takes me to the first building, and there's a bronze plaque. And an Englishman had taught him to memorize in perfect English the story of each thing. So, all right, so I go slow. I said, "Tree outside." The tree was wrapped in bundles of straw. It was a pine tree, 50 feet of straw bundles all around it. And the tree was maybe 80 feet, 90 feet high. I said, "Tell me about tree." He said, "Tree sick. Give medicine. 200 years more? Okay." What a thing. He was in his 60s or something like that. He'd be gone 30 years or so. 200 years more, the tree would be okay.
Mm. I went to Japan last year, but I never get a chance to go to Kyoto. I went to the Tokyo, but it was about 700 or 800 miles from Tokyo, so our tour never went there. But it's beautiful.
Yes. But it's that kind of aspiration and love that we have for nature to bring her back to health. We see these beautiful trees. You know, they absorb carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide, and they give off oxygen. So it's when I was in the Amazon last month, flying over it, you can feel that it's a huge lung, and it's just giving oxygen to the whole planet.
I feel like sharing with you. We were in Vancouver. We have this longest gondola ride over the forest.
Mm-hmm.
So see the trees, longest trees.
Yes.
The forest.
Did you go to Bouchard Gardens?
The last year
did?
We had gone.
Yeah.
Not this year. Not
this
time.
Year.
Last year we had gone to Alaska.
Back.
And that time.
What an experience
that
is. Huh?
That is.
Flowers. And actually, Vancouver, Victoria. Hanging baskets of flowers in the street.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen anything like it.
Yep.
It is so beautiful.
But Europe has things like that? No. The
some places, yes. Yes.
Yeah.
I just got an email from somebody that the most beautiful garden of the world is in United Arab Emirates. I have the pictures at home.
I have the pictures too, but that's
artificial.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even though we have not seen it, I can imagine what you're saying.
Like Dubai, right? Right. Plastic palms and all this. Right.
Yeah. Some degree.
Let's look at
this
pine trees here. These great pines, and we know all about pine cones. These are evergreens, and evergreens. We do not see the leaves drop. Although they don't drop all at once. You can see the pine needles on the bottom. So there's a constant renewal of the foliage. Dropping, putting on new leaves, putting on more leaves, dropping again. The pine straw is one of the best mulches that we have.
Mm.
And you probably know that, you've seen that.
Yeah,
you can
pine mulch.
You can put it on a slope, and a bare slope, and the water will not erode the soil because the needles interlock. And so the rain is absorbed. Now the significance of all the evergreens, mother's name, perpetual vitality. So when you see an evergreen, that is representative of perpetual vitality. It's actually not just representative, but it is vibrating with that significance. Vibrant and vibrating with that significance. And many times I have sat at the base of these great, great trees, especially in the in the Sierras, in the redwood country. What power is in them? And that power is transferred to you if you're open to it. In any big, big tree. Anybody know how to measure a tree? With the bark of the tree, yes. But there's the measure, the height of a tree, not the age.
Age is at the end of the tree when you find the circles.
That's the age.
That's
the
age.
Right.
That's the age.
So if we want to know the height of a tree, who has a pen or a pencil?
Trigonometry. Huh?
I have a pen.
It's very simple. Very simple.
The angle, you take the angle.
You stand back far enough and you put someone at the tree. Let's say that person is 5 feet or 6 feet. So you hold the pen or pencil like this until you have the person's foot at the base and their head at the top. So let's say that's 5 feet. And then you just keep moving up by 5 feet or 6 feet like that until you get to the top of the tree. And you've got the height of the tree. Now they have lasers. Who's yours?
Yeah.
They have lasers for golf course now that tell the exact distance to the hole. Pretty amazing. Very acidic, yes. Long, long needle pine. Beautiful pine. Look at the length of these needles. Look at that. Probably at least a foot, huh? Look at that. There are short needle pines also, but this one's really good for the mulch. And what they do is they have machines in Mississippi and these lower states, and they actually, once a year or so, they collect the pine needles, and that's what they put in the bales and that you buy and use for your gardens. Call it pine straw.
But then don't you have to counteract it with something because of the acidic voltage?
No, because it's not in the soil. So, and then again, we have many acid-loving plants. It doesn't really affect the soil very much. The way we tell acidity and alkalinity in the soil is called pH.
Yeah.
And we know pH from medicine and everything else. I mean, so a pH of 7 is neutral. And you can use a little testing thing, a soil test.
Yeah.
And to get your pH, it's very important because plants only like a certain range of pH. If it's too acidic, they won't do well. And if it's too alkaline, they really won't do well. So to an acid soil, you add lime, which sweetens it. And any of you who have grown hydrangeas know that if you want a pink hydrangea and you have a blue plant, you just put lime all around it, and next season it'll be pink. If you have a pink hydrangea and you want it to be blue, you put acid food around it, acidifying food. We have all kinds of acidifying food in the nurseries. My mother used to, when we were kids, she would say, get all the nails, rusty nails, and put them around so we could, the rusty nails would turn it to color. So one can work with nature that way just by knowing the pH. So a pH below 7 is acid, and above 7 is alkaline. And most plants love that pH in the middle, but there are many plants that like it a bit acid.
The middle.
Yes, and all your evergreens like acid soil. Your Japanese iris love acid soil. And your bearded iris, that we all know, that likes roughly around neutral. So many things can grow in a neutral soil. And you can get these little soil test kits where you take, there's a test tube, you put a little soil in it, and then you fill it with water, shake it up, and then put the little paper strip in there, and the color will come out. And we'll tell, and then you'll look at the chart, and according to that color, it'll tell you exactly the acidity or alkalinity of that soil. very helpful.
Is that the tree or the flower in it?
The flower.
This tree has a flower. You mean this?
Yeah. We saw one yesterday. It's out of season. But we did see one. And on the back side this morning, I saw a couple. Big white flowers.
Yeah, I think it's one of those.
Huge white flower. Mm. Now, these are the seed pods. And inside here, when these are ripe, there'll be red seeds or reddish-orange seeds. This is an evergreen also, with beautiful, I'd like you all to feel this, the back side of the leaf. Feel the back side of the leaf, it's so lovely.
So what tree is this?
Magnolia. And the genus is Magnolia, and the species is Grandiflora, big flower. Magnolia grandiflora.
They have two types like this.
There are many magnolias.
My home, it smells so good, and it's little small flower.
Yeah,
it smells so good.
Yeah, oh, it's a wonderful
fragrance.
I smelled
yesterday one of these, but it's different.
Yes, these magnolias that have been brought into the world through hybridization by man. Mm-hmm. We have Samuel Summers, we have St. Mary, Magnolia St. Mary. And these are all smaller plants,
yeah.
Not huge trees like this.
Yeah.
And the flower's not as big, but very fragrant.
Yeah. Yeah.
Beautiful
so
fragrance.
When somebody comes to my house in the evening time, you say, what is this smell?
Yeah, exactly.
So nice.
Yeah. And in India, of course, we have the jasmine.
Yeah, jasmine.
We have the tube rose. We have these intensely fragrant flowers.
Are these seeds ready to be used? Seeds?
No. They have to grow a lot more. And then they'll expand, and actually you'll see the seeds in the middle of the cone.
Oh.
Yeah, and each cone will have many, many seeds. And those seeds, when the cone splits open, then they're ripe.
Still playing tennis in the 60s?
Just once. The question was, did I ever see Mother play tennis? And I have a beautiful story to tell you about my friend. He was an aristocratic Russian, Dmitry von Morenschild. And we met when I was in my 20s, early 20s. And he lived in the ashram at Golconda. He retired there and passed away at about 100. Now, Dmitry was in the Tsar's navy. And when the Russian Revolution happened in 1917, he escaped to France and then eventually made his way to America. One of the most brilliant minds I've ever met. His English was so perfect, and he had words that I'm still struggling to understand as his natural conversation. Well, he had a friend, a mutual friend, Eleanor Montgomery, in New York City. And Eleanor said, really, you must go to the ashram and meet Mother. She gave him the book, Prayers and Meditations. And when he read Prayers and Meditations, he said, I have to meet this being. I mean, it so moved him. He was, at the time, editor of a periodical called the Russian Review. And it was a collection of all the samizdat, which is the secret underground papers that people would smuggle out to him about what was actually happening in Russia. And he did that Russian Review for more than 40 years. It's now a collection in the Hoover Institute in California. There's a room dedicated to it. So he comes to the ashram, and he hates everything. He doesn't like the regimented marching of the children and the older people. He doesn't like the idea that there's all these money-making departments and everything, and he's ready to leave. So Elena says, just go to the tennis ground and see Mother once, because you haven't seen her. All right, I'll go. So he walks to the tennis ground, and he sees Mother hitting the ball. And suddenly she turns and looks at him. And he levitates 3 feet in the air. And that was it for him. he didn't want to leave after that. Nothing else mattered. I'm taking you here just to show you the beauty, simple beauty of landscaping, the beautiful curves that they have made with the grass and the junipers, the daylilies, and little taller shrubs behind them, and then the wonderful, wonderful building with the natural tile shingles. And we're going to walk up here. Look at this wall. How wonderfully and with such perfect attention to detail that they have laid each level of stone so carefully. They probably used a plumb line, but it's some of the best stonework I've ever seen. We do have many kinds of stonework, but the most beautiful type of stonework is where you're looking at the wall and you don't see cement. Look at that. Mm-hmm. And they colored the cement, of course, they colored it so that it would blend, the top would blend with the stones. Okay, this is a type of, I believe this is a Morea, and we can see here how many seeds in one pod. And the seed, if you squeeze it hard, you can tell if it's viable, if it has life in it. If it's papery, it won't have any life. So these are all living seeds and will be, in this case, the exact duplicate of the mother plant. The seed varies in many species. For example, Shadalu was talking about the plumeria, psychological perfection. Anyone been to Hawaii? No? Yes? In Hawaii, often, especially in the olden days, it was the plumeria that was the lei that they put around your neck. that beautiful fragrant. Now they use orchids and other things too, but when the plumeria gives seed, no plant comes out exactly the same as the mother plant. So you can have a seed pod of 50 seeds, and you'll have 50 different plants. Very often not as good as the mother plant, unless you consciously cross it with something. You choose the best parent plants and cross them, then you are liable to get something very special. And that is hybridizing. And if we have an opportunity, I can show you that very simply. But I wanted to take you, just look at this building, the view that you have down below, the lake in the distance. You have trees here that, there's a dwarf, a group of more dwarf magnolias right there. Not the big one. You see the leaf will be a little smaller also, more compact plant. And then you have the dogwoods. You have maples that will be brilliant fires of red and yellow and orange in the fall. It's just so beautifully done. The pathway in the brick where you don't see cement. Here, where you needed to have an absolutely smooth surface, it's done perfectly. A beautiful slate, the walls, the wood, and the view.
What kind of plants are in the water?
That's a water lily.
Water lily.
And the mother's name for all the water lilies is Wealth.
Wealth.
And the Garden of Wealth is one of the 12 gardens of the Matrimandir. And the Garden of Wealth will also have cactus, which represent riches. So water lilies, wealth, and cactus, riches. An interesting combination, because the cactus wants it very dry, desert-like, and the water lily has to live in water.
Okay.
So it'll be a most beautiful garden one day, where you have cactus and then you have all that water element. So we'll go down and walk around. Can see here, this is a red bud, and here are the seeds beginning to ripen, and there's no sculpture like nature's sculpture. Every seed is different. As Swadali was saying, nothing is repeated. Everything is different. Each seed is different, and it's slightly in its shape. So we'll go down and look at a few flowers now. And look at the quaking grass on the left. Beautiful, beautiful grass. With its seeds beginning to ripen. We'll let everybody get here first. You see the fish, lots of fish, and the koi, the Japanese koi. It's a carp. The water has to be oxygenated, so there's a recirculating pump just to keep oxygen in the water. And the we have seen in Oroville when we introduce some koi, the great egrets coming down and pulling them right out.
Koi is the big one?
The koi is the big one, yeah. The little one's a baby koi. So here on to our right and our left is a plant that most of us, I think, have seen. What is the name of it?
Black-eyed Susan.
Black-eyed Susan. Very good. Black-eyed Susan. Now, I'm going to read you about this. It is also called Gloriosa Daisy. Cone flower. See, it's like a cone shape. Now, Mother has named this one. Rather long significance. First turning of the vital towards the light. And she says, the vital prepares itself to be transformed. Very powerful. First turning of the vital towards the light. And here we have another one. And the name of this botanical name. Now we have botanical names are always the sure identification. Common names, maybe 10 different plants could have common names, but only the botanical name will apply to one plant. And this is Gaillardia, and Mother's name is Cheerfulness. It's rather cheerful. These are the Japanese iris that like wet conditions. So you can see here that this is a bog area. Where you, if you have, and you have the dwarf cattails over there, you have pickerel weed, you have all kinds. But the Japanese iris, the flowers are huge. I have about 500 in my garden, Mother's garden in Georgia, and the size of the flower ranges from about 5 to 8 inches across. I mean, it's a sight you never forget. And they just like their feet dipped into the water or into damp or wet soil. So they finished. Early June is their flowering season. Okay. Mm-hmm. How many of you know this? Have seen the cattails in the water, in lakes, at the edge of lakes and all? When we were kids, we used to get the dry ones and light them up, smoke them, to keep the mosquitoes away. Which ones? These are not trimmed here. Mm-hmm. These are trimmed.
Okay.
To shape them, but these are natural.
Mother the most.
Mother always gave men the red rose, which is human passions changed into love for the divine. And she usually gave the women white roses. Look here. Can you hold this here with one side for me? Okay. Page 219. 220. 221, 222, 223. All those pages are roses that Mother named. So many different kinds of roses. The most prolific rose in that part of South India is the one called Surrender. A small rose
very fragrant. Now we have the China rose, mm-hmm. which you, many of you may have seen, tenderness for the divine. We have, many of the roses have to do with surrender, but you can't make a general statement about any of them, except that some flowers, like the bright orange roses, are flaming love for the divine. And the yellow roses are mental love for the divine. And the white roses, most of them in general, integral love for the divine. And all roses that have not been named are love for the divine. So,
how beautiful, huh? You see a slow swan silvering the lake, is the line in Savitri. A slow swan silvering a lake. And then in another passage, a moon-touched palm tree, single by a lake. Look at the images Sri Aurobindo gives us. You know, it's not all the intense yoga. He shows us nature in all her beauty at times. Once he says, alive and clad with trees and herbs and flowers, Earth's great brown body smiled towards the skies. And then he has another one where he begins the seasons in India. The monsoon, the intense heat of the summer. And then, he says, then spring, an ardent lover, leaped through leaves and caught the earth bride in his eager clasp. His advent was a fire of iris hues. His coming was the arrival of joy. And he ends it with a long passage. He talks about the jasmine. He talks about the mango. I have to tell you about that. But he ends the last line with, all nature was at beauty's festival. Now, Mother named three fruits. Just the fruit. Anybody know any of them?
Mango, divine love?
Divine knowledge.
Divine.
Mango is divine knowledge.
Pomegranate is? Divine love.
It is very interesting. The pomegranate has the fruit is divine love spreading over the world. You open that pomegranate, you can understand that. The flower she named also, the white pomegranate flower, unmanifest divine love. The double orange, divine love. The single orange, divine sacrifice. Mango is divine knowledge, the fruit of the pomegranate, divine love spreading over the world. And we have one more. Grapes. Any idea?
Abundance?
No, that was the pumpkins, that family.
Unity?
No, divine ananda.
Oh.
Oh.
Ananda.
Ananda.
So we... we eat lots of grapes. We'll have to make our way back. I think we can go this way and see some more things.
We do have a lot of grapes here. And the grape tree.
See the sunlight on the trunks of those trees. Those trees are all intimacy with the divine. And we sit under one integral intimacy with the divine, the pure white. So we'll have some colors here to look at. Now remember the bark where you sit every day
under that tree, the bark is excoriating, peeling. And these beautiful, beautiful examples, this is intimacy with the divine in the psychic, the pink. And then the dark reds are in the physical. And then there's a lavender, a purple, which is in the vital. See, again, according to the colors of the being. Material, the dark red. Red, the physical. Purple, the vital. Pink, the psychic. Yellow, the mental. Then the higher realms of the mind, the blues. Up to supermind. Gold and orange.
Did Mother say anything about the rising sun in the morning?
Not as such, but she does speak of the sun, of course, as the giver of all life. But when we are talking about flowers, she says their whole life is a worship of light. Light is, of course, the material symbol of the divine, and the sun represents, under material conditions, the supreme consciousness. Now we have, across the lake, we pass by when we go to the cafeteria, the cherry trees. There are two right there. These are weeping cherries. And this one is not so healthy, having a hard time. It's another weeping cherry here. And the cherry is the family of Prunus, P-R-U-N-U-S. And the Prunus, Mother has named the Japanese flowering cherry, right here, smile of beauty. When it's in bloom, I mean, anybody been to Washington, D.C. during the cherry period? Yes, you have? Oh, wonderful, good. And then we have Prunus communis, which is the almond tree, and that is smile of nature. So both are smiles, smile of beauty and smile of nature. And, when you could just see that fellow when that cherry is in full bloom, that pink against the white, against the lake, against the green of the grass. All nature was at beauty's festival.
There's a pop.
Ah, yeah. Look at it, huh?
It's the bottom.
I think it is. The we have a great blue heron on the lake where I live also, and there's one in the cherry tree. Now the great blue heron is a great fisherman, and he stands at the edge of the lake. Absolutely still, never moves, and the fish, because they don't see his movement, come close and he gets them. Now I have an interesting story about the great blue heron. My friend.
Good morning.
who lives on the lake also, went out by the lake one morning from the house, and he saw this great blue heron choking to death. It had swallowed a fishing lure,
and the fishing lures have the barb, and you can't get it back up. He grabbed it in his arms and took it to the veterinarian, and the vet said, well, there's only one way. We have to take it out through his chest. And he cut all around the chest, lifted it out, and pulled the barb out, sewed him back up. In 1 week, the heron was flying over the lake again. When we make this inner connection with nature, and all the plants and the birds, animals respond to us, we can see what has to be here. For example, I had a pair of mallards who would come to me when they were very little babies, and I would feed them. And then as they got bigger, of course, they didn't want to be around man very much, and they would eat from a tray. Then the word got out, and one wild mallard, they were all wild, of course, but one mother had 9 babies. And they would all walk up the hill behind the mother, and I had to get a big chicken feeder to put 50 pounds of corn in there. And that mother would let each baby eat all it wanted, and only then would she begin to take a bite of the corn. Then I had a friend who was a swan. Her name was Juliet. And no, swans are not the most beautiful creatures in the world walking up a hill. They waddle. But in the lake, they're perfect. She would walk up the hill to greet me regularly and put her neck around my neck. Oh. And actually my wife took a picture of that one day. And that there's no feeling like that unity with all life. Snakes become my friends. They walk over my feet and go into a pile of leaves to find some food. The most dramatic story I can tell you, and then we have to get back, is I returned from the ashram. I've been living alone for a long time, and I fell very ill, and of course I had no one there to help me, so I was lying in bed trying to, you know, calling mother and trying to get over this, and I hear this high pitched cry. And I get myself up and I walk upstairs and go out on the deck, and there's a hawk, big hawk. And in 1 second, whoosh, she brushes my head with her wings. Fever's gone, no more pain. I go out and I start working in the garden. I realize that she is starving. And I had met a man some years before who photographs raptors, the hawk family, falcon family, in cities. And he was doing his work in Atlanta. So he said, you get chicken legs, raw, not cooked, and she'll take them if she's starving. You know, I went out on the deck. Of course, she had just healed me. I had no fear. I held the chicken leg out. It was gone in her claws, just like that. Every other day for weeks and weeks until she was strong. And now it's years later and she still remembers me. Now the sequel or the end of the story is not yet. I come back to the ashram, and my friend, Bharati Reddy, has told someone else, and I hear of his story. She knew I was ill, and she went and she prayed to Mother. She said, Mother, he
sometimes doesn't like to ask for human help, so please go in whatever form you like. And I only learned this months after when I came back to the ashram that, okay, we have to go. Hummingbird feeders. Mm-hmm. They're wonderful. I have a hummingbird who comes every year 1,500 miles from the Yucatan Peninsula. And he comes right to the wire that held the feeder all those previous years. And if I don't get the message, then he comes to the window and hovers in front of the window till I get the message in front of my sink. And then if I still don't get the message and I walk outside, he buzzes over my head. And then I have to make the mix up and bring out his food. They're very territorial. They chase each other all away. And there's another hummingbird feeder. The red, you see the red shining there? It's just a mixture of sugar and water. Of course, they make these mixtures. There's the feeder there. And they're so delightful to see. And one day I was out in the garden and I was just watering some plants, and I wanted to spray the dust off one plant, and the hummingbird came and danced in the water. And that's something people have seen. You just hold the hose up, a very fine spray, and they'll come and they'll play in that water. It's almost 7:25. Okay.
We're not missing breakfast, are we?
If you have any questions as we're walking, you certainly feel free to ask.
The basic question the flowers mother would give all visitors, or how often, or what you give a smile. Tell us a little more about how she would give flowers, when, and.
Well, when you went to mother, you always brought flowers. And we have a flower room in the ashram, and you'd go to the flower room, and they would give you a bouquet to bring to mother. Now, mother has made a comment about this, it's in the book, that many people would get fresh flowers, and by the time they brought them to mother, they would be wilted. And others would take a wilted flower, and by the time it got to mother, it would be fresh. That says a lot about us.
Any significance about the lotus?
The lotus, yes. Good question. The white lotus is Aditi, divine consciousness. And the red lotus is the avatar, Sri Aurobindo. Aditi and the divine consciousness, avatar, the red or the pink lotus.
So you said, did you say about white lotus?
Yes.
I missed that.
White lotus is the mother's flower.
Okay.
And her symbol is like the thousand-petaled lotus.
Yes.
And it's called Aditi, the divine consciousness, is the white lotus. And the pink, or red, they call it, is the avatar.
Anything about tulips? I just saw some tulips. I had pictured
tulips.
Some tulips in Boston in last.
Wonderful. Session. Tulips are blossoming. Blossoming tulips. Ah, yes. Yes, beautiful. Where was that?
So this is Boston in
Boston.
Spring.
Boston. Ah,
spring.
Yes. Lovely. Mm. Yes. Daffodils, power of beauty. Hyacinths, pride of beauty. This is the Japanese garden area, and see the use of stone, the dwarf trees, the rather unique tree set by a rock. That's actually a pine tree, a variegated pine tree.
There's the purple sinna, the one over there nearby the rocks.
That's pickerel weed, yeah. That likes water too, grows in the water.
The purple one.
Right here, yeah.
Yeah.
With the spikes?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's pickerel weed. It's an aquatic loving plant. It has to have water. Its roots should be in water.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay.
Yesterday there was a variegated plant leaf that was like red and white, red and green.
Yes.
And it had a tall shooting flower. You mentioned that it was for physical vitality. Said if like you're feeling tired and depleted and you know maybe your body is a little more weak, this plant has something to offer your like physical vitality. Okay, also
coleus, strength in the vital, that's what it was.
Also it's the vital.
Yeah, it's the vital.
Coleus,
C-O-L-E-U-S. See the seed just forming here now. Rather spiky.
Mm-hmm.
But beautiful leaf shape.
Yeah.
Only thing is it's not so good in pedestrian thoroughfares because you don't want to walk on those.
These are the hibiscus, right?
That's a hibiscus, yes,
yeah,
it is.
What's its significance? Like, well, I had the red one, that blooms.
The single red one?
Yeah.
Is dynamic
red.
Power.
Dynamic.
Many
power.
Of the hibiscus are power. And we don't have one here to show you.
Yeah,
that's coccineus.
Like
that's a native hibiscus.
Okay.
And it's very different from the hibiscus originally from China, Hibiscus rosa sinensis, from which we derive all these great new hibiscus. But I can just show you a minute how you pollinate a hibiscus and get new flowers,
mm-hmm.
if you'd like to see that.
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
Hibiscus mati tita.
Mentalized power. Yeah, and the ladyfinger also has a yellow flower. That's also mentalized power.
Would this plant grow in New Jersey? Would it tolerate frost?
I've never seen it that far north, but you could try it. You could try it. It is a native.
The one which grows at my home are single, but large enough to live. Twice of this size.
Oh, that's called Southern Bell. I know that one.
Twice
it comes
of
in
size.
Pink, it comes in white
red,
and
yeah.
red.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
So they are not from the hibiscus family?
Twice large.
Yes, they're all hibiscus family.
But twice larger than this one.
Oh, yes. Very big. I show you this for hybridizing is because the reproductive organs are so clear. In many plants, they're very difficult to find, and only a moth can go down the tube, or an insect or a fly can pollinate it. But here we have the stigma. And the stigma is often sticky, so you can remember stigma. Because the stigma has to hold the pollen. Okay, the stigma is the female part, and then this is the style here, and here is the ovary. So we have on the female part, stigma, style, and ovary. And in the male part, anther and the filament, the little tiny wire that holds the pollen, huh? So, to make a hybrid, you will take the pollen from one flower pick that flower and dust the stigma, and that's all. And if it's fertile and it's at the right time, I used to do it mainly around 10:30 in the morning. That would be ideal. You dust it, and then it will travel down here and fertilize the ovary, and the seeds will form here. And here are the seeds forming right inside. You can even see the formation of the seed, and I think here you can see the further development of the seed, and here you can see where the sepals, where it's just beginning. So these seeds, if ripe, you could start, but you see, this is the previous season's seed pod, and now you have the current seed season, and you have no more old seeds and not yet ripe on the new ones.
There's a kind of yellow kind of powder around their leaves.
The yellow powder is the pollen. And this doesn't, you can see just a little piece here, and if you look on this, there's a couple pieces of pollen on this. See it? A few pieces of pollen, the yellow. Okay, that's what you dust on top of here.
And then that will produce a tree.
That will produce the seed. Right.
Okay.
This is a little late in the season for this fellow, because you can see the development already of so many seeds. Now, what they need to do is simply take these old branches out and let the new branches come, which are very strong. Mm-hmm. How do you see if a branch is alive or dead? If you're pruning a plant, you want to be sure.
I do like this.
That's what you do, exactly like that. You just scratch a little bit
green,
here, and you can see this is completely dead here. Completely dead. Dead. And that, obviously, is telling us it's alive, but sometimes you don't always know. So you just do that little bit, and then you'll know where to cut back with your pruners or your pruning saw. Okay. An hour goes by so quickly. How do we go? We go through here? Okay. It is. Let's see. Okay, now, very often these are eaten by insects. These are the seeds.
Oh.
And actually, when you squeeze it, squeeze, empty, right?
Empty.
See? If it were viable, fertile, it would be hard.
Mm.
Hard like a rock.
Oh.
These have already been eaten by insects. Got a good one.
Yeah, there's one hard in it.
Good. Got a good seed. Very good. Okay, that's observant.
So you don't see any plants, any baby plants growing from the seeds around there? I mean,
yeah, sometimes you can see them. The birds are great carriers of seeds. Seeds have... Seeds have different ways of germinating. The sandalwood tree, the seed has to pass through the intestines of the civet cat, and the acid in the civet cat's stomach softens the coating on the seed, and it can germinate. In other cases, the bird has to eat the seed and pass it through, and it germinates. In some cases, a fire has to break that hard coat of the seed. Now, in other cases, water.
Yeah.
The seed has to soak in water for some time.
Amazon forest.
So, we have many, many ways in which seeds germinate.
is aspiration for light. Yes. It's only with the advent of the mind, man's ignorant mind, that all these things come in. Okay, we're on our way, sorry. We'll follow you.
Sometimes on the rose plant, you know, when you say sex, you keep eating on it.
Yes.
How much ever you want to control, it's very difficult.
Very difficult.
How do you, is there anything you can do to the soil to...
Not really. Other than chemical treatments, it's very difficult. But there are things that you can find on the internet. Look under organic insect control for roses. And it'll tell you a lot of things.
We tend to spray.
It's not always successful.
Yeah. It's almost like it's taken over the plant.
At that point, you almost have to resort to chemicals. And so you get what's called rose and flower food.
Yes.
Which is, you see, that was another, I didn't tell you that last night. Mother, said that we should only grow organically. We should not grow plants with chemicals. And so no chemicals for the foods that we eat, only organic growth. Now, I asked Mother, what about the flowers? And she says, for the flowers you can use chemicals.
Wow,
that was a revelation. And organic people don't like to hear that. But I ask you this, if you are seriously ill and you need intravenous or injections, are you going to say no, like some Christian sects, or are you going to take it to keep the body alive and move on? Okay? So in some cases, especially about the roses, if they're being so attacked, we have what we call systemic control, in which the root system takes up what will kill all those insects. Mm-hmm. So you do it once or twice, and then you've got balance achieved again, and then you don't do it. So Mother taught me so much with that one statement. Yes, we can use it, but we must use it with great care, great sensitivity. We don't just go, as we saw in many areas of the country, the planes fly over with chemicals. And, oh my God.
So you think the vegetables should be grown organically?
Absolutely.
But
yes.
It can. You can also intervene in the vegetable garden if it's infected once in a while.
No.
It's only for the flowers.
Only for the flowers, yeah. But there are certain things, like there's Bacillus thuringiensis, which is a natural bacillus, and that takes care of all the worms, all the worm larva family. You can use that. And it's available in all the garden centers. You just spray it on and it takes care of that.
So I heard avocado is being grown in Ashram, in the lake.
I grew avocados at Matrimandir. I had wonderful avocados for years. So they can grow there, and they are actually grown in Oro Orchard, which is in Oroville, at the outskirts of near Mortandi and Promes.
where the now it's becoming a highway. From the growth in Pondicherry in the past 50 years is unbelievable. I mean, now you can't even get a house for less than 20,000 rupees a month for a flat. Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. I was just offered a flat for only 20,000 rupees a month. Whoa!
Naraji, what is the significance of, I don't know the name in English, but I know the name in Hindi, it's called Mogro. It's very...
Mogro.
White, very...
Mogro is jasmine. It's jasmine, Mogro. And it's purity. Mother's name is Purity.
Is it jasmine? This one or that one? Then what is Ratrani, the night?
Night queen.
Yeah, what is that?
Yeah, that night queen is Sestrum Nocturnum, and mother has named it. And its name is. Here we are. Air. And the day jasmine, queen of the day, is light. So the one that blooms in the day is light, and the one that blooms in the night is air.
So is it true, like jasmine and the night queen, they get infested really easily?
No, they're quite resistant. Quite
that's
resistant.
The landscape, because I told him to get a plant, don't use that because it gets infested.
No, but I feel so bad now. Someone had given me that Mogra the other snare.
The double one or the single one?
We don't know, it wasn't flowering.
Oh,
at that
I
time,
see.
The Mogra he had given me and I didn't take care of it. So I didn't take care of it. These trees are
integral intimacy with the divine in front of us.
Wow, that's so symbolic, huh?
Very, very symbolic.
Is it what it is?
And what is the botanical name? You said
Lagerstreamia. Lagerstreamia.
This is in between the Indian varieties
of
jasmine.
Yes, Lagerstreamia and the common name, crepe myrrh.
Integral intimacy with the divine.
Crepe myrrh.
I find it hard to believe, huh? Is that what it is? You're not making, I mean, obviously you're not making this up.
Here's the book.
I mean, that's so symbolic. That's just to match how it happened.
Lagerstreamia indica, white, integral intimacy with the divine. The entire being no longer vibrates except with the divine's touch. And we sit under it.